There are some people in the cybersecurity industry who blaze a trail so bright it's impossible and frankly unwise to miss them. My guest today is one of those people. His name is FC and his moniker is Freaky Clown. He's an ethical hacker with an impressive background, for example, being paid to break into hospitals and rob banks, all in the interest of helping his clients improve their security. He has been a guest on this podcast once before, and on this second interview, he shares his wisdom on Lego for hackers, the danger of putting AI into everything, and his favorite advice for CISOs and the companies that employ them. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talus Security Sessions podcast. So, FC, it's been 2 years since we last spoke. Welcome back. I know you don't let any grass grow under your feet. So I just want to start by asking you what you've been up to. What have you discovered that would be of interest to CISOs and their companies in terms of new technologies or new threats? What is new out there?
Yeah, I mean, this comes back to that old story of like, what are the new threats? Well, the threats always remain the same. I've been in this industry now for 33 years, something like that. And the threats never change. It's just the scale, right? The scale changes and the tools that criminals and the defenders can leverage changes. But the threats never really change. It's still criminals doing bad things. It's still, you know, we're still seeing cross-site scripting and SQL injection, all of the stuff that we were seeing before. We're still seeing social engineering, which has been around for centuries. There's no change in the threat. It's just how people are finding ways to leverage them or different ways to attack you using those threats. So yeah, I'd say that the biggest thing we're seeing is AI is being used to help write a lot more phishing emails, but it's also being used to help capture a lot of phishing emails. So I would say the biggest thing for me is this is the first time in history, I think, that we've had a really interesting thing happen, right? So the criminals will find something, right, to take advantage of. And they take advantage of that. And then all of the defenders, we all go, oh, that's interesting. We need to figure out a way to stop that. We figure out a way to stop it. And the criminals find a new way, right? It's this cat and mouse game between here's a bad thing happening and then here's a good thing to stop the bad thing. And then it carries on. And it's done that forever. This is the first time I think a tool has been released, AI in general, has been released where both sides have been able to leverage it straight away. And I think that's kind of unprecedented in our industry, where both sides now have the same amount of power and they're just trying to figure out how to use it as quickly as possible. And I actually think the defense side is doing a lot more stuff than the criminal side. And the reason I think that is happening is criminals, unfortunately, still don't need to be as sophisticated as we think they need to be. So they're not having to leverage all of this new toolage because the simple stuff still works, right? Like, why go for this really expensive, hard to understand stuff when just asking people to change bank accounts will probably work 10% of the time?
Interesting. And you know, this idea of being in an era where both sides get access to this new technology at the same time, it almost makes it sound like the word defense is maybe an inaccurate word to use now. In cybersecurity, we always harbor this notion that we must defend against attack. Is it possible then that we can change our perspective to become more aggressive with what we have been calling defense in depth? Is there a greater opportunity to fight fire with fire? I'm not playing with semantics here, but there is a different mindset, it seems, between trying to stay ready to defend against an oncoming attacker versus going out there and cutting them down in a more offensive way. So what's holding this up?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's that old adage of, you know, the best defense is a good offense, right? The issue we have with this, and for those listeners that don't know, I used to be the head of offensive cyber research for Raytheon, where we did a lot of really cool stuff against other nations, right? And that's kind of like building weapons, as it were, for that sort of thing. The thing that we used to battle against the most is attribution. Attribution is by far the hardest thing that you can deal with in cybersecurity. And that basically means who it is that is targeting you. Because it's really, really easy to hide yourself if you're trying to attack someone. And what you end up doing is if you start to go after those people, they are almost certainly never going to be the people that you actually need to be attacking.
Well, yes, that is plainly evident with certain organized groups that can cover their tracks by launching attacks from other countries or different IP addresses, or even mimicking the style of another group, even hiring younger associates to do some of the dirty work. So as you said before, this is a cat and mouse game with increasingly sophisticated cats and mice. In addition to our earlier discussion in the episode entitled The Eternal Brilliance of the Criminal Mind, we aired two episodes recently here on the podcast. One was on deepfakes, specifically the difficulty of both detecting deepfakes and also simply being aware that they exist. And also in episodes prior to that, a couple of our recent experts have stressed the importance of culture as a central pillar of taking on threats. But it still seems like the threat landscape is growing. To that end, I recall something you showed me when we were preparing for this call, and that was something you called Lego for hackers. So can you expand upon this?
Yeah. So basically, we're now at the point where we have agents and modules for doing very specific tasks. The Lego for hackers that I showed you is called NAN, and it allows you in a very graphical way to kind of drag and drop in different modules. And then just like almost any node-based type software, you can say, here's an input, do a thing, and then here's the output. And then you basically chain that output into other nodes that do other things as well. So it's very, very easy now. You don't need a lot of programming knowledge to do this. This has now lowered the barrier to entry again to do really sophisticated things. I was showing a client a couple of weeks ago on how to use this, and we set it up to do an entire payment fraud scheme. So it went all the way through from OSINT on their company, finding all of like their suppliers, doing scans of their networks, finding vulnerabilities, taking advantage of those vulnerabilities, creating bank accounts, and then transferring money through like some other means. And that took maybe half a day to put together in this program, to like easily just drag and drop. And because of the way it's set up, it's like once you've got one thing that does a sort of a generic task, like say OSINT, for example, you can just copy and paste that into like other things, so that all you have to do is feed in a company name and the output is always going to be the same. And that it's that allows you to very quickly scale these types of toolings.
And is it because it's so easy to use that it becomes a greater threat because it is not sophisticated coding?
Yeah, because if you're not relying on an attacker having years of experience of like coding stuff, they can just watch a couple of YouTube tutorials and then they understand roughly what they're doing. The barrier to entry and the knowledge to entry is vastly reduced. So it's a really worrying time for that sort of thing.
Okay, so this technology is free software that anyone can access, and you can also use it for good, right? I mean, are there other purposes for it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's mostly used for automating tasks in your house or in your network. I have one that's set up that scrapes several news feeds and then puts that into a Discord channel. It's nice and easy for stuff like that. You don't need to even have AI power in there, but now you have that ability. It makes it so much easier.
Why do people not know about it already, or do they?
It's not really new. It's been around for some time now. It's like any other tool. You can find new ways to utilize it. If you have that mindset of like, how can I use this to do my job? Like if I was a musician, I would probably be using it in a completely different way. It was meant for automating tasks, and the things that I'm doing with it is automating cybersecurity tasks. So it's not necessarily a new thing. New tools don't come around that often, but new ways of working with tools do.
That's a quotable quote right there. New tools don't come around that often, but new ways of working with tools do. I guess it's because CISOs and cybersecurity professionals are so overloaded with just keeping their heads above water generally. Becoming aware of tools like this might be new to them, even if the tool itself is not. And this, of course, leads us to the biggest elephant in any room right now, which is AI in its various forms, especially as it is being used by threat actors. So, FC, in the circles that you travel in, how are you seeing organizations leverage AI as a tool for fending off attacks and for keeping data and assets safe? And how do you feel about the fast pace by which AI is being adopted?
There are a couple of companies that are on our radar that are leveraging AI in this manner. I don't want to give away their names just now because their products aren't launched, but there are some exciting things coming up where we are using AI to tailor awareness and training to specific people and their job roles and stuff like that. So it is coming. It's just not quite there yet.
Products in the pipeline. AI is clearly a remarkable and highly versatile technology. Do you feel it is being overhyped or oversold? Are people in general too focused on the marketing and the sales and the FOMO, fear of missing out aspect? What are you seeing as a problem?
No, it's true. It's like AI is this big new buzzword and everyone's kind of got a little bit, how to put this politely, they've got a little bit giddy with it, right? Like they want to put AI into everything. The first thing I would say, if you're trying to put AI into your product, is it possible to do what it does in a different, simpler method without using AI, right? Because AI is this beast that's really gargantuan, and it might be a bit too heavy-handed for what you need. It's also going to introduce a lot more security issues because you have to put in safeguards and guidelines and all sorts of stuff, and then people will try and break through that.
Okay.
We've seen so many accounts of that happening. That if you can find a simpler way of doing it that doesn't require AI, then that's probably the better route to go. If you're doing AI just for the marketing or because the C-suite says, oh, this will help sell the product. A good example of this is, actually I saw today, was Microsoft have pushed Copilot into Windows 11 so much that people have been using Windows 10. And so Microsoft's response to that is like, well, we're stopping support for Windows 10. So now people are going back to like Windows 7. And so they're kind of using AI. They want to get it out there so badly that they're kind of putting off their customers. I don't blame them for trying to do it, but that's what we'll see. We'll see this kind of pushback, I think, from consumers of like, does my toothbrush really need AI? Like, does it even need Wi-Fi really? So you're going to get a lot of pushback, I think, in the next coming year, I think, where people just get fatigued with seeing AI and everything, just like we did, you know, years back with quantum computing, which hasn't really taken off as much as they thought it would. So maybe we're going to get to that point as well.
Yeah, I could see that is obviously how an organization would keep pushing the product. I remember the day just recently when Copilot suddenly appeared on every Microsoft product, every single paragraph you type, every single PowerPoint slide, everything you did. And of course, they wanted to make that happen. And it's nice to be able to set the rules of the game when you essentially own the ball and the field. But it's what you might want to call the Clippy syndrome, right? I mean, you introduce something, nobody likes it, so they're going to move away from it.
Yeah, it's when Clippy gets AI and then starts invading everything.
Well, it is so true. There's certainly a very large consulting firm out there that has a hype cycle. It's quite famous. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yes.
And it seems we are mostly still at that peak of elevated expectations at this point.
Oh, yeah.
But again, you know, it would be remiss of any security specialist to not acknowledge the presence and the threat of AI, as well as its potential for enhancing their abilities to protect their organization. So what else is new and exciting in the industry?
Personally, I've been working on a small project. This is something I think we need to do as a cybersecurity industry, actually, is I really enjoy looking at other security tools, right? I'm not a programmer by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a developer. I can hack code together. But I do enjoy poking at other security tools and testing them. And Nmap is one of those tools that is absolutely one of the key cornerstones of cybersecurity, right? Everyone uses it. It is fantastic. It really is. But I've been reusing it recently and I've noticed a couple of gaps that it has. And so I've been working on a new tool to fill in those gaps. Years ago, I found an issue with Nmap, where it wasn't responding correctly to what was happening. So I think we need to make sure that we're self-auditing. That's a big area that I think we don't really focus on. We sort of get all of these tools in and we're like, oh, okay, this is cool, and we'll do this. And the beauty with stuff like open source is the code is there. You can download it. You can look at it. You should be doing that. You should be doing it just for A, your peace of mind, and B, because you can, right? And because you can is a very powerful mindset to have in cybersecurity. It's like, you don't need a reason, right? I'm not going to get any money out of this new tool. I'm not going to get some sort of payout from Nmap for finding these issues. It's helping the industry as a whole get better. And I can afford the time, my time, looking into these things. And I think other people should as well. That's the biggest thing that I've been focusing on recently anyway.
Reading between the lines here, it seems also, aside from the fact it's an interesting tool, it seems that you are pointing out the sad fact that most people in security do not have the time to discover tools like this, mostly because they are fighting fires all the time. So what advice could you give to an organization to help them change the culture in some way so that perhaps certain security people within the organization can have time to noodle with things in order to develop something?
The biggest things that I would say to do is empower your team to tinker, right? The people you have on your team are probably really, really smart, and they're in the day-to-day struggle of doing really boring things, right? And that gets tiresome very quickly. Let's put it that way. What you want to do is find out what they're doing 80% of their time, right? What is it that takes up the bulk of their time during their day? And then figure out a way to automate that, or at least alleviate some of the strain of that job. Is it getting in another person, for example? Or is it using NAN to automate some stuff? Like, how can you take away some of the strain that they're seeing every day? And that frees up some time. And then you can say, hey, do you know what? Feel free to use that time in any way that you want to look at anything across the business that you think might be improved by some piece of software, some piece of code, anything that you can find to help someone else do their job quicker. There is a lot of stuff out there that is just boring, mind-numbing, repetitive work. And the one thing computers are really good at is boring, mind-numbing, repetitive work.
Which ironically is what I always say to people about AI. You know, rather than struggle to think about how to handle AI like it comes as a big kit in a box somewhere, instead you look around your office and ask, what are the things that are really the grunt work here, or the basic repetitive work that I could have an AI tool doing? What are the wasteful habits, the things that are taking our time, that if we could relieve people of that, we can give them a chance to become better? And this applies to no matter what industry they're in, like accounting, for example, anything like that, where you can get rid of the data entry stuff and do something of higher level, of a higher value for your clients. So that's potential for these things to come full circle here.
Yeah, and it doesn't always have to be some fancy, really expensive piece of software out there, right? The people on your team have their ear to the industry, right? They know all of these little tools. When I went into my last role, they were struggling with stuff like moving VMware, ESXi servers around and stuff. So I was like, why don't we just use Proxmox? We'll use Proxmox. It's free. We get rid of thousands and thousands of dollars of licensing issues. Everything's portable. We just move it over and we're done. And we save tens of thousands on licensing just because we ended up going with a free tool, which sounds super scary, but I can guarantee you, if you go into the C-suite and say, hey, I've got this solution that costs nothing apart from time and is going to save us money in the long run, they will bite your hand off for it. And it's just people don't know about these solutions out there, or they're too scared to use them. So.
Yeah, too scary. I mean, change and new things in general are scary for people. It's the devil you know, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the interesting point about this, I always keep coming back to this, is the 3M post-it note. I mean, everyone in the world knows how to use yellow stickies, and they've been around seemingly forever, but they came from a culture, you know, at a huge company, 3M, that promoted this exact thing.
I have them here.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was that. It was encouraging their engineers to noodle and play on company time.
Yeah.
And even if 9 things out of 10 are failures, once in a while you get the post-it note. You get Gorilla Glass on your phone.
Yeah.
And these are all the things that came from that kind of mindset and culture.
Yeah. There's a, I can't remember who said it. It might have been Jeff Bezos. It might have been Steve Jobs. One of them. They have this thing for how they make decisions. And it's like, can you roll back that decision quickly, right? If you can roll back that decision quickly, just do it. If it's something that is going to fundamentally change the company, then no, take your time and think about it. But mm-hmm. if, for example, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to move, I'm going to stick with this example. If we want to move from VMware to Proxmox, can we roll that decision back? Yes, right? It may take a couple of days to move VMs or whatever, but we can go back on that. So let's try it, right? And it might fail or it might succeed and we've done a really good thing. But if you're going to like, actually, we should move from making widget A to widget B, well, that's a big business change. So therefore, maybe you should take some time to figure out if that's the right thing for you as a company to do.
Very sage advice. Once again, FC, you present a perspective on safety and security and progress that a great many people can benefit from. And if they can do their part to shift their culture towards experimentation and awareness and change, so much the better. It is truly a pleasure having you on the show. FC, thank you so much for spending some time and being here today.
Thank you very much.
You can find out more about FC, also known as Freaky Clown, including his writings, consulting services, and his amazing book, How I Rob Banks, at freakyclown.com, as well as at the website of the consulting firm that he runs with his wife, Dr. Jessica Barker, which is at Cygenta, that is Cygenta.co.uk. And remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talus Security Sessions podcast. You can also follow us on our new Instagram account at Talus Cybersecurity, one word. And we will be back again very soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.